The grace, mercy, and peace of the triune God be with you. So you saw the title of the sermon series, Blind Spot. What's the first thing that popped into your mind when you heard that word? Yes. Driver's Ed. Yeah. Right? Yeah. The instructor yelling at you for the 10th time to check your blind spot before you change lanes. See, we learn practical things in church on Sunday morning, right? You all are going to be checking your blind spot all week. Or yelling at one of your kids to check the blind spot while you are simultaneously stomping on that imaginary brake pedal and wearing a permanent hole on the passenger seat carpet. Do you remember those days? Yeah. You may also have thought about another blind spot, that place where your retina meets your optic nerve. Every one of us has it. It's an area that receives, apparently, no visual information. It's about the size of an orange held at arm's length, if you can imagine that. And yet, sighted people, we don't walk around with a spot of darkness the size of an orange. Somehow that hole is filled in by a complex process that uses information somehow from the surrounding visual field and fills it in. It's truly amazing. So our Lent series title, Blind Spot, was inspired by a book that Linda and I received for Christmas, Blind Spot by Teju Cole. Cole is a novelist. He's a gifted writer and also a photographer. And this book is kind of it's a hybrid. It's a photography book, but it also had and pictures that Cole's taken all over the world. And it's alongside these brief, enigmatic meditations that sometimes connect with the picture and with each other, and sometimes you're not really sure. So I've read through a lot of the book, and it's hard to form any hard and fast conclusions about what is Cole talking about, what is his thesis. But the book, to me, is an exercise in pushing us to see things that we often miss because we're visually not always paying attention, to see what is just maybe beyond the limits of our vision, to confess that, yeah, we have blind spots, but there are ways into them. And maybe our blind spots are the place that we need to spend some time during the Lent season. Several times in the Gospels, Jesus says that people are listening to him, but they're not really understanding at all. If you have had small children, you understand this experience. They hear and they hear, but they don't hear. What he says in our reading this morning is really a direct quote from the prophet Isaiah, who says, people are looking, but they don't perceive. They're listening, but they're not hearing. They're not understanding. So what are people not seeing? What are people not understanding? What is Jesus talking about? Well, if it's Jesus, I don't think the answer is very complicated. I mean, throughout his ministry, you can read through the Gospels, and people were very quick to diminish what he was doing by putting Jesus into these little boxes, into these narrow categories. And so long as people do this, they're unable to see what Jesus is really about. That the heart of his work is not doing miracles or telling us to be nice to each other. The heart of his work is pointing to and ushering in a new reality that he sees, but that we seem to have great difficulty seeing. This kingdom, this reign of God that he constantly talks about, coming, he says, arriving. When? Now. Where? Here. Really? So we continue to read these texts in church on Sunday mornings about not seeing and not understanding, because all of us, I think, are struggling to see what Jesus sees and what he is doing. It's a kind of a blind spot, I think, isn't it? We hear that our deep calling is to love every single neighbor and to care for the earth and to resist injustice, and we hear it and we see it, and yet, we don't quite get there. And so we don't really hear it. During Lent, my hope is that each one of us is going to have the courage, the bravery to face our blind spots, to look down those paths that we never take. Because my deep intuition is that those blind spots, in them, we will find new energy and new life, and we may find a deep sense of calling. So one way to look at blind spots and to approach them is to ask, what is it that's blocking our vision? What's getting in the way of seeing God's Spirit and what God is doing among us? Well, our muse for Lent is Christian ethicist Cynthia Molobita. So you'll hear her name. It will become a household word for you, I hope. Cynthia Molobita. She writes about practicing justice and resisting structural evil, and she also writes about all the stuff that gets in the way of us doing anything about resisting evil. In her wonderfully complex book, she intertwines theological reflections with case studies from the real world. So one life story that she tells is about a woman named Robin Martin, and she's first spotted squatting in a doorway in downtown Seattle. She's rattling a Wendy's cup, hoping for a few coins. Do you have a picture? Can you picture Robin? We learn that Robin was a cashier at Walmart. She had a good job. She worked 9-hour shifts, but then she went to stay in a shelter for the night because she lost her apartment. She can't afford rent on her Walmart salary, even for a cheap apartment that she shares with other people. Robin became ill and was eventually laid off when she missed too much work because there was no sick pay. I'm sure this isn't the first time that you've heard a story. You've heard stories like Robin's story, right? Yeah, okay. How do you react when you hear stories like that? I mean, can you kind of be aware for just a moment of what's your internal reaction to that? Do you seek out those kind of stories? Do you do searches on the internet for those kinds of stories? I mean, would you subscribe to a magazine or a web service that would send you those stories daily so that you could read them? I'm thinking probably not, right? I mean, there's part of us that would be like, yes, I probably need to do that, but no. Which means that one of the barriers to seeing what's really going on and to acting is that seeing many times is just too hard. When we hear Robin's story, when I hear it, I feel this paralyzing sense of guilt about it. And I feel overwhelmed. I feel powerless. Like, what in the world am I going to do? If I saw her, I could put money in the cup, but would that really accomplish anything long term? Cynthia Molobita says that she gave a lecture one time after she'd returned from Central America, and she was talking about all this resisting structural evil and telling all these stories and things, and this deeply compassionate woman in the audience took the microphone and said, "Cindy, I honestly can hardly bear to listen to what you're saying. It's too painful." I mean, we know how complex these issues are, right? And that what we're talking about is not just Walmart, and we're not just talking about the poor in America, but around the world. We're talking about the systemic exploitation of the poor and the massive suffering that it causes. And if that's not trouble enough, then here's the really awful part, that you and I directly benefit from Robin's suffering. That's hard to hear. And so we hear it, right? And then we kind of shut down because we imagine, what could I do? I mean, all the marching and petitions and phone calls and the letters in the world, that's not going to change anything. except that Walmart has changed a little bit. Have you noticed? It's changed a little bit for the better. I mean, it may not be in response to labor activists and movements and all that. It may be response to some other forces at work in the marketplace, but there are some changes going on. So here's the thing, and this is something that I hope that you'll hear until maybe you get kind of tired of hearing it. I know, and you know, I know that my action alone is not going to dismantle massive evil systems like racism or economic injustice or how we hurt the climate. I know that. But these systems were put in place. They were not put in place by gods, right? They were put in place by human beings. Which means what? That these systems can be dismantled by human beings if we work together. And so what we do is absolutely vital, even if it appears to us to be trivial and insignificant. You know, sometimes I think the Bible is so right on when it personifies evil and talks about evil as a person. Are you with me? The word that we don't use in church, this church a whole lot, the D word. I mean, think about it. I mean, there's this pervasive sense, it's almost kind of an urban legend that the little bit that I can do about justice or mercy is a drop in the bucket, and it's, you know, what difference is it going to make, and it's worthless, and so why should I even bother doing this stuff? Where did we learn that? Where did this come from? If I were conservative, I would say that is the devil's work. I would say that. So, I'm a progressive, and I'm going to say that is the devil's work. Amen? And what we need is an exorcism. Amen. Because if you and I'm ready, you know. Give me the prayers, Lisa. Let's get the oil out and let's do it. Because if you and I don't act, nothing will change. If you and I don't catch this vision of God's goodness and God's life pouring through us and through creation for transformation, nothing is going to happen. Nothing. So it's going to take individual human beings, people just like you and me, to do this work. But here's more good news. We don't have to work on it alone. We're not on our own. The beauty of thinking about these justice-y things during Lent is that we can help each other find ways to practice. And we can hold each other a little bit accountable. There are about 40 or 50 of us that are in small groups working on this stuff. I wish there were 240 or 50 of us in these groups. And so my challenge to those of you who are not in a group is to think about what's the obstacle to me getting into a group like that? And how can I get beyond those obstacles? So I'm committed as your pastor to doing this work alongside of you, not just to, you know, blabbing about it up here and preaching about it and saying, rah, rah, go, go. I'm committed to doing it. And so I've thought about my own blind spots. What are they? And what I've noticed is when it comes to justice work, I follow these well-worn paths, you know. We have these sweet little dogs at home, and they have these little paths that they follow, right? Do you have that? And they won't ever get off the path, and there's some wisdom in that, but that's me. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's good work, but I wonder sometimes, what am I missing? What is God's Spirit inviting me to do, and I'm on the other line? God, I'm busy right now. Can you just hold on? I'm doing some good work here, so just I will get back to you. So over the last week, what am I going to pay attention to? So I've been paying attention to my emails. I get all of these emails from all these places. I get so many emails from the Austin Sanctuary Network. I get two or three a day. You know, our congregation is a member of the Austin Sanctuary Network. This is a group of people banded together to support immigrant rights. Well, several organizers are writing about being concerned about a young woman who's being detained by ICE. And I hope it's okay that I say all of this stuff, but I guess it is, because I'm just going to say it. So, and she is now at the private prison in Hato. I don't need to tell you about private prisons. You all know about that. She's filed a complaint of sexual harassment against one of the guards. And my understanding is that the response of the private prison was to threaten to put her in solitary confinement unless she retracted her allegations. So this is kind of where we are. A call went out to the detention center to put pressure on ICE and to all of us and to try to get more compassionate treatment of this young woman. And so we were asked to visit Laura. Because if she has visitors, then she won't go into solitary confinement. So I heard the call to go, right? And I thought, okay, I'm the pastor. I'm supposed to be in the lead on these things, right? And we are part of this network, and Jesus is calling, and so I must go. But first, I have several good reasons for putting it off. Number one. This is a huge time commitment to drive to Hato, to go all the way there and to wait to see somebody who is in prison, and I am a very busy pastor. Number two, I don't speak Spanish. Laura does not speak much English. What in the world are we going to talk about on our visit? Number three, prisons. Have you ever visited anybody in a prison? They are super creepy places to visit, right? They're not welcoming. Yeah, that's not part of their deal. So I tried to be welcoming when I was there, and they kind of looked at me like, who are you? So three reasons, big reasons. It's not difficult to talk yourself out of doing this important work, right? So I thought about blind spots. And I thought about what we were all being invited to do, and I thought about what I was inviting you to do during Lent. And so I set aside these discomforts, and I thought, okay, I need to get out of the office for a little bit, and so off I went. And it took even longer than I expected that it would take. I was texting people while I was waiting there, I'm not going to make it, I'm not going to be there for this. But I'm so glad I went. I'm not going to lie and tell you that it was the beatific vision at the Hato Detention Center, and that the whole room was suffused with a strange glow, and that I heard God's voice speaking to me, but it was just a holy time. It was a sacred time to be there. Laura was sitting on a couch in a sterile, imposing visitation room, and she smiled and she gestured for me to come in and sit down. I would say Laura's doing okay, not great. You know, think about it. She's 24 years old. She has left the horrors of whatever was going on in El Salvador, and our response is to put her in, incarcerate her in prison. I don't think that's really the best place for her to be. That's just my opinion. So she's doing okay. She is so grateful. She understood that I'm a pastor. She understands this congregation, and she so appreciates your love and prayers and your support. The experience, though, of being in prison and of the things that have happened to her, you can tell it's taking this huge emotional and physical toll on her. We talked as best we could across the language divide. One of the things that we both knew was the Lord's Prayer in Spanish, because we say the Lord's Prayer in Spanish here, so we could say the Padre Nuestro. We said it three times. And then I blessed her. Que Dios te bendiga. And then she blessed me. And we kept just kind of saying it back and forth to each other and smiling. So I thought on the way home, the blind spot for me is that I can see so clearly all of the reasons not to go, not to get on the path. I can see all of the obstacles. They're so bright in front of me, but my imagination just fails at the point of creating, what does it look like to go? What does it look like to be on that bright path, doing this beautiful kingdom work? And so during Lent, my prayer is going to be just one line from a great old hymn. Open my eyes that I may see. Do you know that hymn? Yeah. Open my eyes that I may see. That I may see God's Spirit moving like a deep river, huh? Seeing the path ahead. My friends, God's Spirit is inviting us into the amazing grace of moving from I once was blind, but now, I see. Because once we begin to see differently, we will live differently. We will, by the grace of God. May it be so for you and for me. Amen.